There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Welcome to NFL Live, presented by KFC.
It's losing, losing, losing. We've got to win a football game.
We know what the hell happened today. We beat ourselves just like last week.
Prescott throws it in the end zone, incomplete.
I can say that, sure, we might have sniffed ourselves a little bit too much.
We know what type of team we have, and we haven't put that on the foot at all this year.
We had the chance, right? We had the chance throughout the season, and we just didn't get the job done.
Can you see yourself making significant changes going forward?
And I certainly can see myself making a lot of change in a lot of areas.
And round we go ahead on NFL Live. Is it decision day in Dallas? With the new year underway, the Cowboys are back at work, and we continue to wait on clarity regarding Jason Garrett's future as the head coach. The Redskins, however, have their man, and coming up to Eastern, they will officially introduce Ron Rivera as the team's new head coach. We'll take you there live. And ESPN.com has its playoff quarterback rankings, a few that may surprise you. Our analysts weigh in with opinions of their own. And new on NFL Live this afternoon, J.J. Watt coming back from a midseason torn pectoral muscle. A short time ago, Bill O'Brien said Watt will play Saturday against the Bills and will be in there quite a bit. O'Brien also said Will Fuller will be a game-time decision. The Texans and Bills Saturday on ESPN and ABC at 4:30 Eastern. And to get you up to speed on head coaches who are interviewing today, Browns interviewing Mike McCarthy. He will meet with the Giants tomorrow. The Giants will talk to Cowboys defensive backs coach Chris Richard, and the Panthers are interviewing Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy. Chris Richard, I should say hello. And that's it for a Thursday. What a week it's been. We're happy to have you with us on NFL Live. Wendy Nix, Josina Anderson, Victor Cruz, and Rob Ninkovich. So, again, the Giants, the Panthers, and the Browns looking for a new head coach. The Redskins about to introduce theirs. Begging the question, fellas, ladies and fellas, what about the Dallas Cowboys? Could it be that no news is good news for Jason Garrett's future in Dallas? The head coach's contract expires any day now, and the deliberations appear to continue. Jason Garrett is meeting with Jerry Jones for the third day this week, and there is still nothing definitive regarding his future in Dallas in whatever capacity. Ed Werder is there, and Ed, we'll start with what you are hearing on the ground.
Yeah, Wendy, the mystery here at the Star 4 days after the Cowboys season ended in failure is this. Why isn't Jerry Jones out looking for a head coach, and why isn't Jason Garrett looking for his next job? As Jones and Garrett resume their series of meetings, I can tell you this. People inside the building have begun to wonder if Garrett is going to have a role with the Cowboys in 2020, whether as the head coach or in another capacity. After finishing 8-8, Wendy, for the fourth time, remember, Garrett, after his final game, said he wanted to remain the head coach of the Cowboys for a 10th full season. And at this point, he has not yet been dismissed. His fate and future remain undecided.
What would, Ed, the hesitation be with regards to moving on from Jason Garrett?
You know, it's difficult to imagine that Jerry Jones could justify that decision to his fan base, but Garrett could certainly make a compelling argument for his return by reminding Jones that he deserves blame in this too. When they talked last offseason about an extension that Garrett wanted, I was told he wanted the security of the contract, or if denied and forced to coach his final season, then Garrett wanted to control his own fate by calling plays. He was denied both requests, and Jones promoted Kellen Moore with one season of coaching experience to offensive coordinator and empowered him to call plays for the first time in his career. It seems Jones referred to this and admitted culpability when he said late Sunday night that they did some things dramatically with the coaching staff that he, as owner, had a lot of involvement in. And Jones said, you can't hang that totally around Garrett's neck. The Cowboys had a record season on offense, but exposed their defense. First time in the Dak Prescott, Ezekiel Elliott era that the Cowboys failed to have more time of possession than their opponents. And so Garrett continues his dialogue with the front office here while assistant on defense. Chris Richard is interviewing for the head coaching job with the Giants, a job that Garrett would want likely if not returning to the Cowboys.
Interesting, Ed. Thank you. It has been quite some time since the height of the Cowboys' glory days. Dallas won 3 Super Bowls in Jerry Jones' first 7 seasons of ownership, but then haven't been back since and have more 8-8 seasons than they do playoff wins since 1996. Listen, honestly, I do feel like it's what people are talking about, JoJo, because there's been so much speculation about this really from midseason on. What do you hear?
Well, a couple things. One, I talked to a Cowboys source within the hour, just trying to even confirm whether or not the Jones had returned from their reported vacation in Aspen to see if this meeting that was supposed to be the third with Jason Garrett and Dallas Cowboys ownership had even taken place. They would not confirm whether that was the case or not. But to kind of couple as to what I was hearing last night when I was talking to a Cowboys source, I thought it was interesting when they said to me that a couple of scenarios have been discussed around Jason Garrett's tenure with the Dallas Cowboys. So that kind of stuck out to me. And then I asked, well, wait a minute, when did those discussions take place? Are we talking about before the season ended or after the season ended? And they didn't want to give that indication. But I said, well, where is the decision leaning towards? You know, and then I thought it was interesting when the Cowboys source said to me, you know, I don't have a gut feeling about this one way or the other. So the reason why that to me stands out is because this was supposed to be definitive, right? All the talk going into the season was that Jason Garrett had to win more, go further into the postseason. Not only did they not go further, they didn't even make it. And instead of it being more clear, it's actually more ambiguous, which could be, you know, intriguing or an indication of something else maybe happening or not happening, or a long, 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 long goodbye.
Long, 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 right? Like that, the long goodbye. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, listen, I said this to Ed, and we've talked about it yesterday. The longer it goes on, you have to believe there's at least a possibility that Garrett stays on in some capacity. Now, perhaps that's not the head coach's role, but regardless, Victor, I'll just ask you, what's the most important thing right now for Jerry Jones and this organization?
Well, I think it's just clarity. I think he needs to provide clarity, not just for himself, but for that entire team, for that head coaching position, that if Jason Garrett isn't going to be in that role, who is? And clock is ticking because other teams are interviewing head coaches, and all of a sudden that pool is going to get smaller and smaller. My question is, what do you see in Jason Garrett that looks like you want to keep him on staff, let alone as the head coach or even in the front office? He's been consistently mediocre. So what part of his, you know, his head coaching or his leadership capabilities or, you know, his talent seeking capabilities, what about what you see in Jason Garrett leads you to believe that you want him in your front office or in those offices making decisions on players? What about what he has done or has he accomplished that leads you to believe that he'll be good at that capacity?
Well,
that's my question.
I think it's a fair question. What's interesting to me is that Jerry Jones, and we know he's loyal to Jason Garrett. He obviously feels connected to him, and he's felt connected to a lot of folks over the years. But it's never really stopped him from making the hard decision. He has moved on when he felt it was best, Rob, for his organization. So in some ways, he must think maybe it's not best, or I believe he would have already done it.
Well, he even said that some of the coaching decisions that were made in this offseason came through him, and he had to make those choices. Mm-hmm. And Jason Garrett not having the offensive coordinator position of calling the plays. But yet they still led the NFL in passing, right? And they were at the top of the list when it came to offensive production. Time of possession is down, yes. Yeah, so you pay your running back a lot of money to run the football, but your time of possession is down from where it was previously. And that all comes down to running the football and kind of setting up your team with the offensive line that they have to controlling the tempo of the game. I understand that Dak he's a great quarterback and he led the NFL. He did some great things this year. But when you can't establish the running game early with the guy that's one of your highest paid offensive players, you have some high priced offensive linemen. That is a tone setting running the football as a defensive player when you're going against an offensive line that's moving you off the ball and they're really just affecting you mentally. I think that goes into toughness. You talk about running the football. That's all about toughness. How tough is this football team? They're 8-8. 8-8, 500 for many years now. So I think they need a little bit more toughness and accountability at the head coaching position, not the friend at the head coaching, not the good close friend that's going to encourage everyone. I want somebody that's going to make everyone more accountable and push people out of their comfort zone, because that's when you grow as a team.
Mm-hmm. I just want to say, I think Jason, what he does well is work with Jerry Jones and that personality and the group of stars in Dallas. Yep. I think what we're wondering is, has his message grown stale to get them beyond 8-8 and get them beyond just 3 playoff appearances in 10 years?
It's a valid point, though, because we've said time and time again, not just any coach can work in that environment. It takes the right one, but you got to win too. So we'll see. Cowboys haven't had a coach this century make back-to-back playoff appearances. Speaking of the playoffs, they kick off in Houston on Saturday afternoon. The Bills will look for their first road playoff win since 92 against the Texans. And then later that night, it's the Titans who will look to take down the Patriots in Foxborough, where New England is playing its first wild card game in 10 seasons. And it is the first time since 2009 that New England will play on wild card weekend. They host former Patriot Mike Vrabel and his surprising Tennessee Titans, powered by the league's leading rusher, Derrick Henry. Here is Mike Reese with more in Foxborough.
Wendy, Bill Belichick arrived at this podium behind me a few hours ago and said we're closing on the biggest game of the year. He noted that the Titans are very, very explosive on offense and said the Patriots would need all the remaining time they had to get themselves ready. One way they did that was different from the norm is practicing on the game field today, as music from Roddy Rich blared. Receiver Julian Edelman noted the mild New England temperatures for this time of year, around 40 degrees. And as the practice began around 12, I watched number 12 throw some warm-up tosses with accuracy as he occasionally shook out his right arm to get loose. Wendy?
And you heard, Mike, the weather is going to be all kinds of bad on Saturday night in Foxborough. Now, when the Titans have the football, one of the most pivotal matchups will be Stephon Gilmore against a rookie. What do you see when you look at those two with A.J.?
Well, I can tell you what, A.J. Brown does not play like a rookie. He's physical at the point of attack.
It is the postseason, right? We don't call him rookies
Nobody's rookies anymore. After 8 games, you're not a rookie anymore. But he's physical at the point of attack. He loves to get up on you as a receiver. But here, Stephon Gilmore does a good job of just undercutting. He looks like he's beat on the shallow cross, but he undercuts it and makes a play. Now, here's A.J. Brown, right? Press coverage, couple yards off, physical at the point of attack, and then it's just all wheels from here. He sees the single high coverage. He sees there's nobody over top to help, so he goes out there and makes a big play. This is what Stephon Gilmore is good at preventing, is the big play, being physical. Here's another press man coverage against Jonathan Joseph. He opened the gate for him, and that's what you don't want to do as a cornerback versus a guy with speed and the ability to make a big play, is open the gate and let him get right by you. A.J. Brown understands how to make plays. He understands how to position his body. But Stephon Gilmore obviously understands how to stop the premier wide receiver, and that's by being physical, and that's by being in your face and getting hands-on. So A.J. Brown, as well as that offense, have to move him around, do some things with him in the slot, do some things with him outside, put him in motion. So Stephon Gilmore just isn't sitting back, pinning his ears back, and getting physical with him at the line of scrimmage during press coverage. Move him around, get Stephon Gilmore to back up and have to play you in space as opposed to being up front.
I think the interesting now for A.J. Brown is that, you know, when you're a rookie, there's less tape on you. Mm-hmm. And then when, you know, veteran cornerbacks like Jonathan Joseph or Gilmore get an opportunity to play you, okay, maybe I got my hips open this time because I'm trying to gauge your speed. I didn't really have a feel for it the first time around. But the second time around, now I see you coming. Now I see,
now I see
how you're working.
I'm going to back up a little bit.
Fool me once.
Exactly.
Just saying.
Fool me once. I tell you what, New England plays exceptionally well at home, but every year is different. I will say, I don't feel like the Titans have the Patriots are a good team. They have a great history. I don't feel like they're going in there scared. I really don't. I don't.
They're not, especially with Vrabel at the helm. He's going to have those guys prepared.
Yeah, fair enough. New on NFL Live, our Eagles reporter Tim McManus with a report from practice. No sign of running back Miles Sanders as the Eagles begin practice today. Lane Johnson and Zach Ertz are here, but off to the side to start. Sanders, by the way, dealing with an ankle injury. The NFC playoffs begin on Sunday. The Saints host the Vikings. They'll be seeking revenge for the Minneapolis Miracle from two seasons ago. And the Seahawks visit the NFC East champion Eagles. Both teams are playing on wild card weekend for the second straight year. So I guess we must call this a postseason edition of Cruise Control. It's not just any old run-of-the-mill regular season edition. No.
This is for all the marbles.
This is for all the marbles. Which means the ultimate destination, wherever you're driving, is to get to Miami, okay? Mm-hmm. So let's look at these four NFC playoff teams, and you tell us where they end up. Do they go to Miami? Do they exit early?
Okay.
What are we talking about?
Well, I'm going.
So,
with the,
we're going to start with the Eagles.
Starting with the Eagles.
Yeah, go ahead.
Here,
no, you go ahead.
And I'm going right to it, just like I usually am. I'm actually going to go with a taxi cab because he'll be taking a taxi because they will be out by the wild card round. I think they will lose to the Seattle Seahawks here. Rob, feel free to chime in.
Yeah, hold on. Let me jump in here.
Wow. Okay.
I think they'll get to the division. That's where I think they go.
Well, they're fly, eagle, fly right there.
Fly, eagle, fly. I think they will
beat. You think they beat the Seattle Seahawks?
Yes, I do.
Why?
I just don't see that.
I feel like they are being the toughest, and the things that they've gone through with injury has made them a hardened team. And in the playoffs, it's going to be fun to see them play Seattle, who's dealing with not having a running game.
All right, speaking of which, how about the Seahawks?
Now, Seahawks, I got them chugging along nicely.
Okay, just
But they
right.
make it to the divisional round. They beat the Philadelphia Eagles, but they lose in the next round to the division. I think Russell Wilson is going to be
These
ready
are our
to
exits
play.
Here, huh?
These are our exit roads. Yeah,
okay,
exit roads
right.
here. But I think Russell Wilson is the key. Obviously, we understand who he is, what he brings to the team. I think he's the most important asset to this football team because he's the one who has to make the big play after big play in order for that team to have overall success.
All right, who we got next? The Vikings.
We got the Vikings here.
Cousin's side.
And I am going with, I think they lose in the wild card as well. I think they're both taking a cab. Because
I think it's cab too.
Look, I like Kirk Cousins. I like what he's done this year, but I just think that they don't have enough to make it to the next round or even to the Super Bowl. And I know that's been the one knock on Kirk Cousins, that he hasn't been able to win that big game or win that pivotal game to get this team over the hump. But I think that trend continues nonetheless.
We got train. We got a little
I'm jumping in.
Bobbing and weaving around.
We got a Boilermaker. Playing the Patriots. They're playing the Saints.
Not just yet, my friend.
Not just yet. So they got to play Drew Brees.
Speaking of which, I like the segue.
Let's get to the money.
Drew Brees and the Saints.
Now, if you haven't noticed, I haven't picked anybody to win a Super Bowl yet because I believe in the New Orleans Saints, Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara, Drew Brees. They're all playing with a chip on their shoulder. Look what happened to them last year. I'd be tight too if that happened to me last year.
Yeah.
I'd be playing with a chip on my shoulder too. Drew Brees, I saw a video of him and just by himself.
He's warming up doing
hours before games, days before game, and he's by himself.
You saw a video of him warming up days before the game?
He's just doing he's just making sure
what exclusive footage did you see that no one else saw?
I think it was Reggie Bush. I think he was showing some footage.
I don't think it was New Orleans Saints game day footage.
I'll say winning.
Obviously, somebody else has got to take this exit. We won't do it today because we'll look at the AFC next week. Somebody's going to chug on down this road to meet the Saints in the Super Bowl per victor. But, I mean, relative agreement, but you disagree with
the Eagles. He thinks the Eagles are going to beat the Seattle Seahawks.
That's all I think. But then I agree with you that the Saints are going to go to the Super Bowl. And I think the Saints, it's their year.
Seattle's also 7-1 on the road. Just throwing that out.
Doesn't matter.
And Eagles got a lot of wins.
It doesn't matter.
In the NFC East division.
Speaking of the road. Cruise control. Thank you. We'll get that back.
I'm on the road. Less travel.
Still to come. The first coaching vacancy has been filled. You are looking live into Ron Rivera's introductory press conference. We are awaiting the new head coach, 2:00 Eastern, and we'll take you there as soon as he is speaking. The Redskins officially named Ron Rivera their new head coach yesterday. Washington fired Jay Gruden en route to a 3-13 season. The Redskins have not won a playoff game since 2005. That was when Joe Gibbs was their head coach. Washington looking for some of the stability that Rivera brought to Carolina, though the Panthers never won a title. They did reach the playoffs 4 times under Coach Rivera, including a Super Bowl trip in 2015. The Redskins last made the Super Bowl in 1991. And in a matter of moments, the Redskins will introduce Ron Rivera as the new head coach. You can see they are getting ready now in the nation's capital. And as we wait for Coach Rivera, I'll ask you each this. What do you most want to hear this afternoon?
I think from Ron Rivera first, I just want to hear why he was attracted to this job. You know, there are several head coaching vacancies out there and why he took this job and presumably so quickly when there could be potential other openings out there, even in Dallas, as we wait for that one. And then secondly, I want to, you know, just kind of hear his evaluation or just thoughts overall of Dwayne Haskins and what he might be thinking with regards to the offensive coordinator position, since we're thinking that he's going to interview the current guy there, Kevin O'Connell, and you know, what he might be looking at a coach from that position if he doesn't go with the guy who's currently there.
Yeah, I agree with that, JoJo. I think the maturation process of Dwayne Haskins is important for this football team. And I think that's the number one issue for Ron Rivera moving forward is how do I get my quarterback, if he feels Dwayne Haskins is indeed his quarterback, how do I get my guy ready, available, with the right mindset? Because we do understand Dwayne Haskins is still a young player. So how do I get him in the right mindset to be successful in this football league? And I'm a little sour about this. I'm a huge Ron Rivera fan. I sat with him while I was up during, you know, when my tenure with the Giants was over and I was going to different teams and sitting down with their coaches. He was the one that struck me the most as just a straight shooter, honest about what he does with his teammates. Everybody loves him. Teammates love him. Other coaches love him. And I think he's walking to the podium right now.
I think he is. We'll take you now to Washington.
Good afternoon. First off, happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Today is the beginning of a great new year for the Redskins organization and its fans. First, I'd like to thank, though, Bill Callahan, who was here 5 years, did a great job for us, a great guy, and we really appreciate him. What the Redskins have needed is a culture change, someone that can bring a winning culture to organization. And it starts and ends with our head coach. When looking for that man, I look for a class act. That's how you describe Coach Rivera. He was 2-time coach of the year. And for those of you that don't understand, that's very, very hard to do. You should Google that, because it's an impressive. He was 15-1. Which is extremely hard to do. Did my research, spent a lot of time, talking to a lot of people, a lot of coaches, and one thing that came across were certain words, and these words were integrity, honesty, knowledge, grit, determination. It's all about winning. Ron Rivera knows how to win as a player, as a coach, as a new head coach of the Redskins. One thing that's very, very important, we're going to have one voice and only one voice alone, and that's the coaches. I'd like to welcome Ron's wife, Stephanie, who we've gotten to know over the last few weeks, and our new head coach of the Washington Redskins, Coach Ron Rivera.
Thank you. You know, it was about 30 days ago that your team, this team, got me unemployed. So just so you know, we're good now. Thank you. It's an honor to serve as a coach in the NFL. It really, truly is. There are only 32 of us at any one given time. And these jobs are scarce. But this one, the Washington Redskins, this one's special. This is one of the almost original teams. Started in 1932. There's a lot of history behind this football team. And in order for us to get back to where we want to be, we've got to study that history, embrace that history, and prepare to repeat that history. Because if we're not, we're doomed to repeat the most recent history. We're not going to do that, guys. We really aren't. Everything we do is going to be about winning. Okay, we're going to learn to do things the right way, and that's the only way we're going to do them. Because if it doesn't help us, we're not doing it, man. That's just as simple as it gets. So why did I choose the Redskins? Probably the question I know a lot of you guys are wondering that right now with everything that's out there. Well, I can tell you right now, this is not about the money. If I wanted the money, I'd still be out there trying to pit a couple teams against each other. I took this job for one simple reason. One simple reason. Because Dan Snyder came to me with a very interesting perspective. For weeks, he's explored the reasons why some teams win and some teams don't. He told me the common factor in that transitional success of teams like the Patriots, the Seahawks, and the Chiefs, and some of the other ones, was the decision to take it and make a coach-centered approach. Not an owner-centered approach, or a team president, or a GM, but a coach-centered approach. I told Mr. Snyder that I appreciate the fact that he believes the head coach matters. But I told him I would be honored, but under one condition. It had to be a player-centered culture. A player-centered culture, something I truly do believe in. My responsibility is to get the most out of the players, to work with them, teach them, mentor them. If I have to do it one by one, I most certainly will do it. I've done it in the past, and I'll do it again. I'll do what I can to help these young men become not just the players we want, but the men in the community we need. These are the guys that can help change things, not just on the football field, but in this world. And I really do believe that. I was fortunate enough to have that in Carolina, and I hope, and I'm going to work to have it here in Washington. Things will begin and end with one simple principle, discipline. I come from a military family where discipline, it isn't taught, it's lived. It's expected from day one. I have a philosophy that every player, every coach, everyone who works for this organization, they'll know it day one. You're not going to play for this team. You're not going to work for this team if you don't have the discipline and the commitment to give us everything you have. No exceptions, no excuses. It's that simple, guys. We have to hold each other accountable. And that's something we most certainly will do. We'll expect the most from each other. Whether I was in Chicago or Carolina, we're at our very best when the players knew that the coaches had their backs. And this is the thing I'm going to ask from the players. Do it the way we teach you. Do it the way we ask. You do it that way, the success will be yours. Okay? You do it that way, the success will be yours. If you don't, success is going to be yours, but it's not going to be right. Why? Because if you fail, it's on you. Do it our way. Do it the right way. And if we fail, it's on me. Okay, it'll be on me, the head coach. It's that simple. And I truly believe that. If I ask of you and it doesn't work, I'm to blame. I told Mr. Snyder I wanted to assemble a coaching staff that was truly dedicated to the players and teachers. Okay? I don't have to have great big names. What I have to have is great teachers. We want to teach these guys how to play football to the best of their abilities, to the best of our abilities, and also to be good quality young men off the field. I want players who are tough, hungry, who will do whatever it takes to play Redskin football in January and hopefully into February. I told him I wanted to work hand in hand with the head of player personnel who could spot potential and others that even I didn't see and others didn't see. That's going to be important because it has to be a collaboration. No matter who it is, no matter who's working with us, it has to be a collaboration. This is not a one-man show. I don't have all the answers. I'm going to rely on people around me. I'm going to rely on the coaches and the personnel that we have put in place to help us put this football team together. I told him I didn't want to go through a five-year rebuilding process because, quite honestly, I just don't have the patience. And from what I've read, neither does he, so we understand that. I told him this team has some raw talent. It really, truly does. It's got some quality veteran leadership that can help this team become contenders. So at the end of the day, guys, this is what the team's going to be made of. It's going to be made of good, quality young football players and solid veteran leadership. Help us take this football team to the next level. So you know what he said? He said, Coach, I want this to be the last job you ever had in the NFL. I want you to go from coaching the Redskins to collecting Social Security. I turn 58 next week, so I'm getting close. But that sounded pretty good to me. And so I say for the very first time, okay, from the very first, where'd you guys hide? All right, I guess there is no jersey. There's supposed to be a jersey up here. But you know what they say? Hail to the Redskins. Let's roll, man. Let's go. Come on. So with that, I'd like to take questions. If there's any questions, be more than happy to. If not, appreciate you.
I think we got a couple, Ron.
Okay.
J.P. Finley, NBC Sports, Washington. We see Jack Del Rio here. You've talked about the coaching staff. You want teachers and leaders. How is it going filling out the rest of the staff and some of the folks here internally, namely Kevin O'Connell?
Well, we're in the interview process right now. You know, we've got several names that we've reached out to. We've gotten permission from some teams to bring some of these guys in, and we'll be going through that process now. Again, we're right in the middle of it. I shouldn't say in the middle. We're in the beginning of it, and it's going to take a little bit of time.
And similarly with the front office, Eric Schaefer, Doug Williams, Santos, Kyle Smith, those guys, similar timeline?
Well, with those guys, it's really just about meeting them, getting to know them as we start going forward. As I said, everything that we do is going to be about a collaborative effort. There's no one pure authority on this other than the owner. But the key is really that we are going to collaborate, we're going to talk, we're going to work together. We're going to come to decisions that we believe are best for this organization, not best for an individual, but best for the organization.
Michael Phillips, Richmond Times-Dispatch. Yeah, I would imagine you've had some time to reflect on your time at Carolina. What are some of the things you've learned that you'll put into play now in this job?
Well, more so than anything else, it's about the players. if you've got players that are right, players that are where they need to be, players doing the things that they can do, you give yourself a chance to win. And one of the things that I really truly believe is that we as coaches have got to give these guys the opportunity and put them in position to have success. If we don't do that, we're failing the players. It all falls back on us. And as I said earlier to the guys, if you do it the way we ask and we have success, it's your success. If you fail, it's on me. But please don't do it your own way.
Ron, John Keim, ESPN. Dan brought this up about the cult-centered approach. You seem to appreciate that and the one voice. Why is that important to you and to an organization?
Well, I think because you don't want people going back and forth. Everybody's got, when we step into the room or we step out of a room, everybody has to be on the same page. Okay, it's like when Jack's going to put the defense together, we can't have one coach telling somebody something else as opposed to what Jack wants. That's just the way it's going to be. You know, we want everybody focused in on what their job is. I got a little bit of saying, these guys are going to get tired of hearing it, but it's true. We need 11 guys doing one thing at a time, not one guy trying to do all 11. Do your job, man. We'll have success. I promise you that.
Ron, Rhiannon Walker with The Athletic. You mentioned the fact that this team has some young talent, some pieces to build around. As you guys currently look at it, Jack said that they're going to run a 4-3. How do you guys currently on the roster, what does it fit for the personnel, and what are some positions of need for the 4-3 for you all?
Well, I think it fits very well. I really do. You look at the defensive line, and we've got guys that we believe can play the 1-3 technique already. We also believe we've got some guys that have played the outside linebacking position that are going to transition to playing the defensive end spots for us, specifically the 6, the 9, and the 5. So we feel real good about those guys. I like the linebacking core. I think it's a pretty solid group of guys. They run well and they play physical. What we want to do is get these guys playing downhill through their gap. We're going to play the run on our way to the quarterback.
Hey, Rod.
NBC Sports Washington. When you look at Dwayne Haskins, he's going to be a big part of your success here in the next couple of years. What did you see from him out of year one, and what do you think he can become for this team?
I think he'd become a franchise-style quarterback. I do. I think it's going to be a time. It's a process, though. I'm not going to say it's going to happen overnight, but I've been fortunate that, you know, several years ago we drafted a guy as the number one pick, and we had a plan. And what we're trying to do right now is develop that plan for his development as we go forward. I also think there's a couple of good veteran quarterbacks that are obviously going to get some opportunities to play as well. We won't know until we get ready to open up in September. So until then, everything's just a process. It's a work in process. We can't get ahead of it. We've got to stay to the plan and make sure we're preparing ourselves properly to win football games.
Hey, Ron, over here. Les Carpenter at the Washington Post. A couple things. First of all, why maybe not take some time after you get fired, you know, to not say maybe, you know, a year or something to kind of recalibrate? And then secondly, why jump right away into a job rather than maybe, you know, kind of feel everybody out over the next few weeks?
Well, first of all, I had 4 weeks off. I'm ready to go back to work. I really am. You know, I got tired of getting up and having to do dishes, so. I'm serious, too. You guys think I'm kidding. I'm serious. Truth of the matter is people ask me when I first got let go, I told everybody I wanted to get back into football. And they asked me, well, what is it that you're going to be looking for? And I simply said fit. Okay? I simply said fit. The timeline is that right after, I think it was Friday of the week I was let go, Mr. Snyder reached out to my agent. And so the two of them talked for a couple of days. And then I got a phone call from Mr. Snyder on Monday the following week, and we started talking. And we talked the first day for about 40 minutes, the second day for about 20. And then I went and I got a bunch of tape. And I've seen about 6 games these guys played, including the one that when I was in Carolina that they beat us in. And I had an opportunity to take a real good look at this team. And so I've got write-ups on every player that played in those 6 games. And that's why. It's part of the reason why I chose this team, because I did like what I saw. You know, I watched the last 4 on television as well and got an opportunity to see these guys fight to the end. The Dallas game, we got a little bit out of hand near the end, and it's understandable to a degree. But for the most part, the way they played, the way they fought, some of these young guys didn't know any better. They just knew they showed up and they played hard. That was impressive to me. Then the other thing was, in talking with Mr. Snyder, the thing that I got was that we talked about his vision, okay, his vision of getting back to the tradition of Washington Redskin football. And I was really impressed about that. We talked about the history of it. We talked about the things that have happened in the past that made this such a great franchise, that had fans that were rabid fans. I remember from when I played, we used to go to the stadium early, and there'd be all those folks tailgating and letting us know how much they appreciated us when we walked into the stadium. And it was a tough place to play. And that's what we wanted to bring back. That's what he wants to bring back. And I was really impressed by his vision. And then he shared with me his plan. And he shared with me the ideas that he had studied and understood. Like I said, the one where it's more of a coach-centered approach in terms of decision-making. And again, as I said, I'm not omnipotent. I mean, at the end of the day, guys, I've got a group of men that I'm going to collaborate with. You know, all of our personnel people are very vital to our success because of the things that they've done in the last three drafts. That was one of the things also that Mr. Snyder asked me to do was study those three drafts and look at those guys that are on that roster. And I did that, and I looked at the veteran guys that were there that were leading this team, that were giving these guys some hope, some chances, being the mentors to these guys and showing them how things are supposed to be done. And I really liked what I saw, and I began to feel the fit. And the more we talked about the plan and the process that he was talking about, the more excited I got. This didn't happen overnight. This decision was not made on the 30th. Okay, this decision was made over a period of time of getting together with him, sitting down, spending probably 35 hours in the freezer. He has his room at his place that's just frigid, and I think he did it on purpose to make sure I stayed awake. So, but we went for 35 hours. I mean, really, we seriously did. We went through every aspect of the organization. That's what I was really impressed with, that he was willing to sit there and go through it piece by piece. And we truly did. I spent a lot of time getting to know the organization, getting to understand the structure of what he was looking for. So to me, again, as I said, it was hearing his vision, understanding his plan, and then learning the process of what he was trying to accomplish. And then I talked about my plan and what I wanted to do, and it really seemed to fit his very well. And so those, you know, the 4 weeks I was off, I was really only off for about 5 days, and then a couple other days where I snuck out to the golf course. But that was it. Other than that, I was really just kind of looking at these guys, trying to prepare going forward.
Ron, welcome. Chris Russell, 106.7 The Fan and SI. What's one or two of the things that maybe you want to do differently or better? You come with a lot of accolades, a lot of success in Carolina, but everybody always wants to change something in their lives. Is there anything that stands out to you that you learned maybe about yourself?
Win the Super Bowl.
That's good.
I mean it, too. You know, one of the things that the only reason you become a head coach in this league, in my opinion, is to win. That's it. That's the bottom line. If you do it for any other reason, you're wrong. Okay, and that's what I want to do, and I really do. I'm not just saying it because I'm at a press conference. I say it because I truly believe that. Okay, I've been very fortunate. Football has been a big part of my life. This is going to be my 34th year in the league. Okay, so I've seen a lot. I've done a lot. And the one thing that I've had is I've had the success to be on a Super Bowl championship team. I would love to give these guys that opportunity so they know what it feels like, what the experience is when you're standing on the podium. That's what we want to work towards. We want to work towards that going forward. And I want our fans to know that we're going to work for. I understand they're disgruntled. I understand they're upset, and they deserve to be. We haven't won, so we've got to start winning. Okay, but I tell you, if you give us the opportunity to get behind us, we're going to give you our best effort. That's what we're going to do as a football team.
Ron, Kareem Copeland from the Washington Post, over here.
Okay.
What was it about Jack that you wanted to, that made him such a priority and that you wanted to get him locked up here so quickly?
Because I know who Jack is. I know who he is as a player. We competed against each other collegiately and professionally, and I've got tremendous respect for who he's been. He's been a very successful coach in this league. He's had opportunities in this league, and he's succeeded in this league. The thing about Jack that I really, truly do will appreciate having him on the staff, too, is one of the things that I tell young coaches is that the one thing you have to have on your staff is a guy that's been there. I got a little saying, don't draw me a map unless you've been there. Well, Jack's been there. And Jack and I had this conversation earlier today, and I told Jack, if you see something wrong, you see something that we need to think about, please tell me, because that's the only way I'm going to know. And I've said the same thing to the players that I've met. I've said to them a couple times that you need to tell me. If you see it, you've got to tell me, because if you don't, it's as if you did it yourself.
Ron, Rianton Walker, The Athletic, you talked about being a consummate winner. You were a part of that Eagles team in the early 2000s that had those back-to-back NFC East championships. There hasn't been a consecutive NFC East champion since those teams. What will it take for Washington to achieve that success of not only winning a division, but repeatedly doing so, making conference championships, and ultimately getting to the Super Bowl?
Well, first of all, we've got to make sure we get the right kind of players, and then we as coaches got to make sure we teach them and coach them up to the best of our abilities. And then we've got to stay true to it. We've got to stay true to what I believe is a little bit of a philosophy, and that is the best team has a great sense of family. The best family has great culture, and within that culture there's tremendous character, and that's what we've got to build. We've got to build that. We've got to build character. We've got to build culture. We've got to build team. We've got to build family. If we can do that, we can win. I watched Andy do that. I was on Andy's original staff. My first five seasons were with him. Okay, I was on three straight NFC championship games, and that was tremendous. It was a heck of a feeling to be involved in those kind of games. That's what we want to get to. But the only way we can do it is if we truly do become a family.
Ron, Ben Standing with The Athletic. We've heard you talk here about this coach-centric approach and also that you do want to collaborate with people. But from the perspective of personnel, the draft, where does it come? What can you say about having final say, or where does your, I guess, level of power and such go into those decisions?
The biggest thing that's going to happen is, and I'll say it again, is we're going to collaborate. We're going to get together as a group and we'll discuss things. If we have to continue to discuss things and it goes a little bit longer, then we'll ask Mr. Snyder to help. Okay, but for the most part, he's given us the opportunity to be a group of men that work together to collaborate, to do one thing, and that's be on the same page, pick the right kind of players, and then put them in position to have success.
Ron, Matt Paris from the Washington Times.
Right.
Okay. You mentioned Dwayne and it being a process, but what are some of the next steps that you think he has to kind of take?
Well, I think, first of all, he's going to have to step up and become a leader. I mean, all the great ones have become leaders, and they become leaders whether they're rookies, okay, or they're 10, 12-year vets. But you've got to step up. You've got to be where you need to be. You've got to do things you're supposed to do. It's all going to start with your off season. How do you prepare yourself? How do you get yourself ready? I think it's probably one of the biggest things that we've got to do, and not just with him, but every one of our players have got to understand that it's an opportunity to lead. You know, I'm going to do something where I try to create opportunities for every player to step up and be the leader at one time or the other. He doesn't have to be, you know, one of the greatest players to play running back, okay? He's got to be a guy that's willing to step up in front of his teammates and tell them, hey, let's go, man. Let's roll.
Ron, David Aldridge with The Athletic. Welcome to Washington.
Thank you.
There have been other coaches who have stood at that podium who we thought had the coach-centric approach. Marty Schottenheimer was there. Joe Gibbs was there. Mike Shanahan was there. All great coaches. And none of them really worked out the way we all thought, including them, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. So what is it that you have been told that makes you feel comfortable knowing that you'll be allowed to see this through to the conclusion you want?
Well, nobody really knows, but I'll tell you this. I believe in me, and I'll bet on me. We'll see what happens. That's all I can tell you. But I will give you one thing, and that is I'm going to work very hard. I'm going to do the things that I believe, and I'm going to stay true to who I am.
All right, that was head coach Ron Rivera, the newest head coach of the Washington Redskins, introduced officially. A lot of interesting things, not the least of which was happy Thanksgiving from Dan Snyder. But I think he just, you know what, they've been busy.
We're going to let that slide, Wendy. I mean,
he skipped
Christmas and New Year's. How do you skip both?
Listen, it happens.
Those are important.
Bottom line is this. One of the first things that came out of this, and I think it was from both Daniel Snyder and Ron Rivera, is that there was going to be one voice. That there had to be, it had to filter through the head coach. Now, it's interesting, especially with the Redskins, because they don't have a GM, obviously, with Bruce Allen having gone, you know, having parted ways with Bruce Allen. So it does make you think, JoJo, that Ron Rivera will have a whole lot of say in the way this direction, the direction in which this organization runs.
Yeah, well, first of all, just watching Ron Rivera stand behind that podium, you can't help but, like, not notice the presence that he has there instantly and how that kind of just washes over the organization from day one. And it kind of gives you an illumination as to why he was brought there in the first place. And then you talk about the one voice and how he wanted to explain why he came there, because he could have leveraged other teams against one another and gone for more money. And to hear that from Daniel Snyder, particularly having this historical experience with the Redskins in the past and how it's gone in the past, to hear that from Dan Snyder, I know, was definitely very important. And then also for him to say that it was very important for him to say to Daniel Snyder that he wants to have a players-rich environment, that that's really important to him, too, in terms of making everyone feel included and how much he also wants them to feel valued and a part of the fabric of what they're trying to do henceforth in making this a better place to succeed beyond what they've already accomplished.
Which we know is important. And I thought it was interesting Coach Rivera said, look, if you do it my way, and it goes well, the credit is yours. If you do it my way and it doesn't, it's on me. So already a tone that this is about the players, for the players, and an environment that we haven't seen in Washington. It certainly didn't have the reputation for that with the Redskins.
That's exactly what he's doing when he's setting the tone. I love when he says, I want 11 players doing one job, not one guy, not one player doing trying to do 11. That's the epitome of what he brings to the table. He wants his teams to be disciplined. He wants his team to go into every game and every season with a plan. And he's going to – and we've seen what he's done with Cam Newton, right, in his maturation process throughout his time in Carolina. I think he's looking at that same type of blueprint for Dwayne Haskins, making sure that he's in a position to win and in a position to make plays without feeling like the pressure or the weight of the world is on his back. And I think that's what Ron Rivera does best, is set the tone for his players. And that discipline that he talks about is real, and that's going to carry over through the entire team once he, you know, once he gets in that facility and starts to talk to players and get his hands on guys.
Yeah, and I love what he talked about, the history. You think about the Redskins. They were the team before these new teams came to be. They were the team. It was the Redskins. And now you look at the last 10, 20 years, they've kind of just become another team that hasn't really had any success. So I think that he's going to take that history, and he said it. He wants to show the players that this was the history here, and we need to bring that back. We need to have that winning culture, that winning history back now. And I'm excited to see what he can do.
Well, the history is in the building, too. Doug Williams is there. Exactly. Beat the Broncos, I believe, 42-10 back. So there's some remnants of it right around the corner.
No question. 5 days off, he said. This man really wants to coach. He took 5 days off, and he took our Jack Del Rio,
dishes.
Which we're a little bit mad about.
But that was the biggest takeaway.
I want to be part of that.
Exactly.
Browns will interview Mike McCarthy. He, by the way, will meet with the Giants tomorrow. The Giants are interviewing Cowboys defensive backs coach Chris Richard, and the Panthers are talking to Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy. It is time now for a cup of Joe, and this time of year, there's always plenty to talk about, especially with these coaching jobs. Let's talk about the Browns, because you've got Mike McCarthy. Mm-hmm. They've also requested permission to talk to Josh McDaniels. What do you hear?
Well, the interview with Mike McCarthy was scheduled for today, and I talked to a Brown source last night, and I was asking them, hey, listen, you know, what is your impression of Mike McCarthy as a head coaching candidate? And one of the things that they told me is that they do not feel like football has passed Mike McCarthy by, although he was out of football last year. And I said, you know, well, what about, you know, all the talk that the Packers offense regressed with him the last two seasons? And the source said, quote, Aaron did a lot of what he wanted to do, so I don't necessarily put that on McCarthy. And the other thing he says, that he felt like Mike McCarthy is really good at load management, because one of the interesting things that came out last night in my conversation is that some of these Browns players were feeling like Freddie Kitchens worked them too hard in training camp in terms of padded practices, in terms of tackling. They felt like that bled over into their week one loss against the Titans. So they feel like Mike McCarthy's a little bit better than that. And then when it comes to Josh McDaniels, a lot of excitement. Obviously, he's a guru when it comes to the offense. I got a text from a player that said, I'm saying no, he cold with that offense. That offense is crazy. Obviously, the 6 Super Bowls speak for themselves, and the instant credibility that Josh McDaniels would bring from his tenure around the Patriots and working with Tom Brady.
Now, Cleveland is also without a GM because they let John Dorsey go. Jimmy Haslam, the Browns owner, spoke a little while ago, and he did address what we can expect from this hiring process.
I do think this sets us up well to first hire a head coach and then have the head coach be involved in the hiring of the GM. I want to stress it will not solely be the head coach's decision. It will be a collaborative process involving ownership and several other members of top management, if you will, as we hire the GM.
Interesting. So they're going to hire a head coach first, and then that head coach will have to sign off on the GM. It seems like that's what we got in Washington. They hired Ron Rivera. They, too, will need a GM. So sort of an interesting trend, I think, JoJo.
Well, I just think it speaks to the experience that they're alluding to that they want to bring into the building in comparison to what they just had as far as Freddie Kitchens' resume when he got that. So that's letting you know that. And typically a head coach of that stature wants to know who the GM is going to be and that they can work with that person as well in terms of having some type of consensus on the players that they need to move forward to have greater success.
Because we do know whatever it is, they have to be on the same page or it doesn't work. On Sunday, the Vikings will head to New Orleans. They will face the Saints. Running back Dalvin Cook looking to be back for the first time in 2.5 weeks. What's his status?
Well, first of all, I talked to a Viking source last night, and I actually wanted to start off with, what did you guys learn from the Saints' loss against the Falcons? Because that was one of their worst losses this season with Breeze. And they said, when we went back and looked at that film, we don't feel like the Falcons did anything really different from what they typically do. It's just that they were more physical and more explosive in terms of not allowing explosive plays, rather. So that's what we noticed with that. And then when I asked, okay, well, you guys also lost against the Saints last year 30-20. Is there anything that you want to do defensively that's different? And they said, well, Breeze only had 120 passing yards that game. And I said, but they still put 30 points up on the board. And they said, but if you look at the turnovers they had offensively, with P.J. Williams having that pick six, and then also Adam Thielen having a fumble loss right when they were about to score, they feel like that was really more of the difference. And then when it comes to Dalvin Cook, as you were mentioning, so what do you feel like has been the impact of his absence the last two games? And clearly, just beyond the fact that they're rushing 20-plus rush yards per game, less per game is what I'm trying to say. Thank you. They also noticed, they also noticed that defensively, that they're coming back on the field a lot quicker. The time of possession went down 7-plus minutes with Dalvin Cook a game out for the last two games. So they were feeling it in terms of that way. And then lastly, I said, do you feel like Kirk Cousins can rise to the moment and can really live up to this playoff game? And he said, first of all, it's just one player. Kirk Cousins doesn't block, tackle, or cover anybody, so we got to do it together. And I said, as a coaching staff, are you feeling more pressure to get back to the NFC Championship game? And they said, no, right now we just are concentrating on trying to get this win.
1 week at a time. All right, yeah. The Texans have activated J.J. Watt, as we expected, off the IR this week. They're getting ready for the Bills. What's the mood in Houston?
Well, I talked to Texans cornerback Jonathan Joseph about an hour ago just to try to get a feel for how they're feeling going into this game against the Bills. And one of the things I said was, what was the impact of J.J. Watt being out? And he said guys like Whitney Mercilus and Jacob Martin had to do double duty. He feels like D.J. Reader definitely stepped up even more. It was a physical and mental tax without J.J. Watt, but they're looking forward to the boost that he brings. I also asked, well, what do you feel like you lost or learned, rather, from the loss against the Ravens when they went there 41-7? Everyone saw that, and he said, look, Deshaun Watson was not happy about that. He knows that his career is forever linked with the Lamar Jackson as far as people making that contrast and comparison. So he took from that game going to everybody else and saying, listen, we can't take the playoffs for granted, and we got to rise up every level. And he feels like he saw that. And then lastly, I said, well, what is your impression of Josh Allen? You know, they played them last year. They were still able to beat him, although Josh Allen didn't play the entire game. I think Nathan Peterman came in the third quarter. He says he remembers what Jalen Ramsey said about Josh Allen when he was a rookie and how he was impressed even after Jalen Ramsey made some controversial comments about him. But he said what they're noticing when they're looking at the film is how many more design runs Josh Allen is having in the red zone, not just with his scrambling, but with the lead blocker. And that's something that they're going to be looking out for when they play the Bills on Saturday.
All right, and they get a boost, and Bill O'Brien did say that we can expect J.J. Watt to be out there quite a bit.
Yes.
For his words. So, our Colts Nation reporter Mike Wells tweeting some notable quotes from Colts GM Chris Ballard regarding the future of the quarterback position in Indy. Here we go. He said, Andrew Luck is retired. We need to accept that and move forward. He went on to say, the jury is still out. He's talking about his current quarterback, Jacoby Brissett. Right now, yes, Jacoby is our starting quarterback for week one of the 2020 season. Listen, the operative words right there, right now. It's not always the case, but a lot of the time when you hear right now, it means we're open and we're looking, Victor.
Yeah, I think they're definitely open and looking and just seeing, obviously, how Jacoby Brissett started the season. I think he did great first seven games. He beat teams like Tennessee, Kansas City. He had a great first seven games. But then at the end of the season, things kind of changed, and he kind of wavered a little bit. Or you didn't see that same conviction in his throws. You didn't see that same kind of, attention to detail, throwing the ball down the field, some turnovers in between there. So I think when they're looking at it, it's a constant evaluation. Everybody knows in the NFL, at every position, it's a constant evaluation of what you've done and what have you done for me lately. And I just don't think that the Colts are necessarily sold on what they've seen from Jacoby Brissett from the beginning of the season all the way throughout the end of the season. Although he's been there for some time, he understands the culture, obviously has a great rapport with all the players. But I just don't think from a natural quarterback position, they've seen enough to really make Jacoby their franchise guy.
Yeah, and if Andrew Luck decided, hey, I want to come back next year, here's the clipboard.
Doors open.
Here's
Andrew the clipboard. Luck doors is open. Retired, and we need to accept that and move on.
He was to say, I'm feeling pretty good now that I've had a year of rest, I think he would be the week one starter. And You know, I bet you that they would be hoping for that. At this point, like you said early in the season, look, I had said that the Colts were the second best team in the AFC at around week seven, and then they started to just slide quickly downhill. So maybe you're seeing other teams game plan. You've dealt with T.Y. having an injury for some of the season, so you lost some key pieces. Look, it's not easy when you're a first-year starter in the NFL. He had some great you know, when Luck was injured, he had some great time to understand and learn how to adapt to the game. But now he was the guy. He was the guy. He had the keys. And the second half of the season, it didn't look good for him.
I just think it's an interesting comment saying that the jury's still out. I mean, how many, you know, GMs or coaches would we hear saying that of even some of the younger quarterbacks that are still out there, whether it be Kyler Murray, Daniel Jones, or what have you, whether we know that a coach or a general manager is still conducting an evaluation of a player, it's still another thing for it to be said, you know, publicly. And I just think back to a comment that I just read about, you know, players, what they think about Pete Carroll and how he keeps some of that stuff indoors. I just don't know. 18 touchdowns to 6 interceptions with all the transition, I still think is pretty good.
And it's funny because he's been there. It's not like he's new to this organization.
I don't like that jury's out.
I don't like that either because he's been there. It's not like they've never seen him.
End of the season press conference.
Exactly. Exactly.
The other thing is that's sort of, you like sort of close the door for now and you leave everybody going, what, what?
And that's certainly not going to help his confidence anymore.
Right. Yeah, to what end, I think.
Better Road would have said we're evaluating all positions at this time.
In celebration of the NFL's 100th season, we look back at this date in NFL history. January 2nd, 1982, the Chargers beat the Dolphins 41-38 in the epic in Miami. San Diego raced out to a 24-zip lead, but that was cut to 7 points just before the half when the hook and ladder play to Tony Nathan sent the Orange Bowl into a frenzy. The game eventually went to overtime, tied at 38. And the Chargers won it on a 29-yard field goal by Ralph Benerschke. The iconic image from the game? Tight end Kellen Winslow, who had 166 yards, being helped off the field by his teammates.
In Saturday's AFC wildcard game, it will be the Patriots who host the Tennessee Titans. Tom Brady has had an uneven second half of the season, which saw the Patriots finish 4-4. He spoke about the matchup against Tennessee earlier today.
You know, I'm just pretty focused on what I need to do, and this week's felt pretty much like every other week for the last 20 years. So just, you know, trying to focus on what I need to do, and it's a team that gives me a lot of challenges, and just have to go out there and try to play really well. And they're going to force us to, really be tied together. And when we're not, and when we haven't been this year, it hasn't looked very good. When we have been tied together, it looks pretty good.
Listen, it's so interesting to hear him say for the last 20 years. I mean, it's sort of mind-boggling, but you look at the bottom there, and you see that 20-3 record, and that is not in no small way why the Patriots are favored going into the weekend.
20-3?
It's kind of incredible, really.
Wow. No, I mean, Tom, the body of work that he's had over the last 20 years, it's a lot of hard work, dedication. I mean, I don't know anyone else that puts more time in than Tom, and he's ultimate professional. So we'll see what happens. I know it's going to be a tough matchup because Vrabel is very smart, and he understands exactly what Bill's telling those guys.
I love teams that don't have that layover between one game to the next. They always have the advantage.
All right.
And according to Woody's bold prediction, that might be his last game as a Patriot.
Oh, there we go. The bowl game, the Birmingham Bowl, Boston College coming up in Cincinnati. Enjoy the game, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.